always safe to drink, and wash your hands a lot during the flight. Next problem, dry cabin air. 20% of travelers catch a cold within 1 week of flying, but recycled cabin air isn't usually to blame. The real culprit is low humidity on the plane. Your mucous membranes dry out and stop protecting you from germs. Make sure you drink plenty of fluids and use a nasal spray. One more, DVT, that stands for deep vein thrombosis, basically the technical name for blood clotting in the legs. The fix? Stretch and walk around every hour or so if you can. John Tesh with today's Intelligence for Your Life Minute.
Thank you, Mr. Tesh. You can hear much more of John Tesh, in fact, his entire radio program, after the Sweet Lou Turner quality effort that will come your way after this show at 2 o'clock this afternoon. It is 17 minutes before 10 o'clock on your hump day morning. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, and he is presidential historian, former U.S. diplomat, and Professor Emilio Iadice calling in from Rome. Good morning, Emilio.
Good morning, Glenn. The best wishes to you and all of your listeners.
Thank you very much. We have sustained quite the barrage of presidential and local politics in the last couple of weeks. I've noticed that the presidential commercials aren't running anymore for some reason.
They've run out of money, or perhaps since the primary is over, they're concentrating on other states.
Yes, I think that is very much the case. But no surprise to your humble talk show host that Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders won big election wins last night. What were your feelings going into it and coming out of it?
Well, it was expected, of course, based on the polls, but also understanding the people of Wisconsin, who have been progressives for many, many years, and have always led very independently. They're independent thinkers, so it's not a surprise, and it's not a surprise that they chose the way they chose. So I think it's also of credit to the people of Wisconsin.
Speaking of choosing, Emilio is also the author of 2016 Selecting the President, the Most Important Decision You Will Ever Make. It's been a little while since we've spoken. Obviously, a lot of candidates have dropped out on the Republican side. How viable do you think John Kasich's case is to stay in and hope for an open convention in Cleveland?
Well, I think he has to expect a miracle, and he has to hope that he could be a compromise candidate if the convention in July really is deadlocked. It's possible because chances are, I would say, 60-40, that Trump will go into the convention 100 delegates short of what he needs to win. And if that's the case, then Kasich could be the balancing act here between Trump and Cruz. He could be the person who changes the equation. So he could be the broker, and that's what I think he hopes for, and also hopes that whoever ultimately becomes the nominee, he can have an influence on the party platform.
Well, you know, Donald Trump, of course, has famously made his bones on making deals. That's the deal. Kasich becomes the vice president, and he brings along not only his 100-plus delegates, I think he's got about 140-some right now, and he'll get some more between now and Cleveland. And then he brings along Ohio, and he gets the vice presidency.
And I think that makes sense. That would probably help the party establishment justify a Trump candidacy. At that point, Trump would have to start looking at the middle road, at the independent voters, and how his message could change and his delivery of his message changes so that he focuses on the independents. I think the convention is going to be very, very important. The human dynamics are going to be absolutely essential because they will determine the outcome not only of the convention and the nominees, but also what November will look like when we have the final election, what the platform is, what are they going to be campaigning on, and the great differences between the two parties.
I've talked quite a bit about Donald Trump's penchant for speaking in the third person and how there is a stream of thought in psychology that people who speak in the third person are very narcissistic, delusional, feel under tremendous stress. And after the loss here in Wisconsin yesterday, Donald Trump released this statement. professor, and I want to get your take on it. Listen to this. Donald J. Trump, it starts, withstood the onslaught of the establishment yet again. Lion Ted Cruz had the governor of Wisconsin, many conservative talk radio show hosts, and the entire party apparatus behind him. Not only was he propelled by the anti-Trump super PAC spending countless millions of dollars on false advertising against Mr. Trump, but he was coordinating with his own super PACs, which is illegal, who totally control him. Ted Cruz is worse than a puppet. He is a Trojan horse being used by the party bosses attempting to steal the nomination from Mr. Trump. He refers to himself as Mr. Trump. We have total confidence that Mr. Trump will go on to win in New York, where he holds a substantial lead in all the polls and beyond. Mr. Trump is the only candidate who can secure the delegates needed to win the Republican nomination and ultimately defeat Hillary Clinton or whomever is the Democratic nominee in order to make America great again.
This is the kind of statement of someone on the defensive. It harks back for me, just like I mentioned in the book, to when Nixon was going through Watergate. He was talking about the president and the president's situation. He wasn't talking about Richard Nixon, but he mainly made statements about the president and the presidency. So it was very similar. Again, here was Nixon on the defensive. He was besieged. So Trump feels besieged. This is a loss for him. He's seeing something developing here that he may be losing control over, and that really bothers him greatly. But this is healthy for him. This could help him if he uses it positively, but I'm not sure he will. One of the points that I make in the book is about emotional intelligence. His emotional intelligence, just like in the case of Hillary Clinton, is being really tested right now. And it shows up as to whether or not they have an impulsive streak. Impulsiveness is one of those things that really is dangerous in a leadership position like the presidency. And what Trump constantly shows us is his impulsiveness. Hillary right now could be because of fatigue, it could be because of frustration, because the length of this campaign is popping up, showing that at times she's charged up, she's impulsive, she feels disorganized. So some of those gaffes could affect the campaign ultimately.
Well, I want to get back to Hillary momentarily, but I want to stay on Trump for a second. You brought up Richard Nixon. That was a very good point. And then I recall Nixon, not only in that case, used to refer to himself in the third person, like Trump does, but remember when Nixon lost, I want to say, the gubernatorial election in California, he famously said, "You're not going to have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore."
Exactly.
There it is. Again, referring to himself in the third person. Glenn Klein is very concerned about people who refer to themselves in the third person.
We should be.
How concerned would you be for the country if Donald Trump would become president?
I would be very concerned because, again, harking back to the leadership qualities that we need, the commander-in-chief test. I wonder if he could really pass what I call the commander-in-chief test, which requires a tremendous amount of knowledge. It requires experience. It requires understanding the way national security and international security works. And it requires a great deal of calmness. The White House is the place that really needs to be calm and collected when it makes decisions. When people in that office make decisions, people in and around the president. Well, what the president often does is collect individuals who are similar, not only in philosophy, but also similar to themselves in the way they do things and the way they lead. Well, imagine a government filled with Donald Trumps. Remember, the president hires 5,000 political appointees. So if he puts in people in his own image and likeness, his own character traits, that's what will pepper the whole government. That will be the team that runs the government's apparatus. So I'm very concerned. I'm very worried. it's something that could be a nightmare for us.
Well, if he brings in a bunch of people that look like Melania and Ivanka, it'd be a good-looking government at least.
That would really be positive, and that could help us a great deal in foreign policy.
He is former U.S. diplomat and author Emilio Iadais. He's in Rome this morning. I'm in Wisconsin. He's the author of 2016, Selecting the President, the Most Important Decision You Will Ever Make. Not only do presidents surround themselves with people that think like them and that act like them, they also surround themselves, of course, with people who think like them politically. And I really respected the fact when Bill Clinton was under stress that he brought in David Gergen, who was a former advisor to President Reagan. And I remember, you like the show The West Wing with Martin Sheen as president?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
right.
And Martin Sheen brings in, the president that he's playing, brings in a conservative Republican to get the other viewpoint. That would be so awesome if the next president did it, because obviously Obama has not done that. He really does like to downplay, and famously is called No Drama Obama, and likes to play the cool cat, but he still makes incredibly bad mistakes. Like, for example, when they drew that red line in Syria and said that if Assad would use chemical weapons, that was it. Well, Assad used chemical weapons, and we didn't do anything about it, and then here came the mess that we find right now today.
Of course, it's a matter of credibility. A really secure leader doesn't worry about bringing in somebody from the opposition to help them. In fact, we recall Abraham Lincoln and the team of rivals. These were people that didn't like Abraham Lincoln. They were, even though members of the same party, they all wanted to be president, and they didn't think he should be. But he was confident in himself, in his own abilities, and he was able to work with each and every one of them because he knew something that was really important about leadership. He knew what he didn't know. So he was interested in getting the best possible person to head up the War Department or the Navy Department, etc. Well, Donald Trump or whoever becomes president is going to need some people that are different than themselves, have a different political philosophy, to help them understand that the tens of millions of people who voted against them also need a voice, and that when you're president of all the people. So more minds that you bring in, especially from the opposition, getting their point of view, the better a leader you will be.
And of course, Lincoln's famous team of rivals cabinet ended up really respecting the president. And Secretary of State Stewart, who was a rival of Lincoln's, they become best friends.
They were. And Seward said, close to the end, he said, "You are the best of all of us. By far, you are the best of all of us." And they became close friends. But Seward, who was a man of a very strong personality, had been governor of New York, respected and had tremendous affection for Abraham Lincoln and looked up to him. These people at the end looked up to Abraham Lincoln as their model as to the way they should have been.
Based on Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals, how awesome was Steven Spielberg's Lincoln?
It was great. It was. I've used it in my classes, my leadership classes, clips from it. It was great. But I think there's even a better one that was done in the 80s with Hal Holbrook as Lincoln. It's called the Lincoln miniseries. Both portray Lincoln in many of his good qualities, the qualities of compassion, humility, as well as steadfastness, vision, courage, which we need in the White House today.
One of the things that I liked about Daniel Day-Lewis's portrayal of Abraham Lincoln is that they showed Lincoln struggling with the dictatorial decisions he had made and wondering if they were constitutional, because really Abraham Lincoln was the closest thing that we ever had to a dictator. And he said in the movie, and he, of course, these are quotes that come from history and from Doris Kearns Goodwin's research, is that he wondered if he had gone too far. That's how introspective and brilliant he was.
Absolutely. Lincoln was concerned about rights, the rights in the Bill of Rights, the rights in the Constitution, and whether or not he was doing things that could violate any of those precepts that were laid down by the founding fathers that could hurt our democracy. He was interested in reinforcing our republic, our freedom. That was his goal. That was his vision. And he was really, really worried that suspending habeas corpus and some of the things he had to do in the Civil War were things that presidents in the future might look upon easily as to adopt under circumstances less dire and less severe than the Civil War. He was worried about that. He was worried about the message to us. And about the future, always thinking about tomorrow for us.
This is Glenn Klein on WRJN, and our community conversation has reached all the way this morning out to Rome. We're speaking with presidential historian, former U.S. diplomat, and Professor Emilio Iadice, the author of the book 2016, Selecting the President, the Most Important Decision You Will Ever Make. We talked a little earlier about the pressure that Hillary Clinton is on, and it manifested in that rope line where she stuck her finger into that Greenpeace activist, and that was not a good moment for the former Secretary of State, said Captain Obvious.
it wasn't. And of course, we have to also understand that she's been under a tremendous amount of pressure, just like her opponent, just like Bernie Sanders. I'm sure that at this stage, if she would have looked back at the beginning of the campaign, she would have never expected that she would have had such a hard time winning and losing at this stage in the campaign. She probably predicted, just like Bill and others, that by this stage in the campaign it would have been over. But it's not. Of course, she still is the likely winner. But by the time it is over, she'll be like the boxing the heavyweight boxing champion who won just about every round, but was exhausted when the fight was over.
And this is the second time it's happened to her. She was supposed to be a shoo-in in 2008, and then this guy named Senator Barack Obama ran, and now she is running neck and neck, at least as far as the popular vote is concerned, with a socialist, democratic, 74-year-old Jewish guy from Vermont. It's unbelievable.
No one would have predicted this from the beginning. Everybody, in fact, the experts, the pundits, all said that this would never happen. It would never get this far down the line. So we still have surprises ahead of us. This is not over yet. There are still things that will pop up here that will affect this campaign. We still can't predict them accurately, but the history of all of this is ahead of us.
Well, in sports, that's why we say that's why you play the games, because you never know.
Exactly.
He's former U.S. diplomat, presidential historian, Professor Emilio Iadice. He wrote the book 2016, Selecting the President, the Most Important Decision You Will Ever Make. You can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. As always, Professor, thank you so much for your time from Rome this morning.
Thank you, Glenn. And again, my best wishes to all of your listeners. Take care and God bless. Thank you.
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, a Magnum.media station.
WRJN covers the world at 10:01.
Standoff Baby Safe, Wisconsin Aftermath. I'm Chaz Henry. An infant involved in a hostage situation at an